Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news, behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views for this hour of Melody Cederstrom, who's our guest this evening. How are you doing, Melody?
Real good, Dr. Stan. How are you this evening?
Well, I'm doing pretty well. There's a couple of interesting things in the news. One of them is certainly the price of oil is down, and everybody's saying, gee, isn't that wonderful? That's going to be pretty good for the economy. In other words, as the price of oil falls, why, people will have more money to spend for other things. But then we notice over in Europe that why the European Bank is talking about raising its interest rates. Certainly in England, the Bank of England raises interest rate a quarter of a point. And what that really means is they're trying to stop the expansion of the monetary supply because inflation is beginning to take over in Europe as it is here. And, of course, here, as the economy begins to falter, they'd like to lower the interest rates, but they can't do that, and they'll have too much inflation. If they raise the interest rates, they'll actually slow the economy even more. So they're really in sort of a lose-lose situation. We see where Ford Motor Company lost $8 or $10 billion this year. General Motors admits to losing at least $3 billion, but it's investing very heavily throughout the world. It's borrowing money, investing about $8 billion a year worldwide, but it's not investing anything in the United States. And people have to understand that our major corporations are moving offshore. And when you hear them about international investing, that means American jobs gone forever. So what are your thoughts about what's going on, Melody?
Well, it is interesting because oil has fallen, and it's ranging around the $52 level. And it's interesting because we have Venezuela. They are nationalizing everything. The Nigerian production, they have so many problems, so much disruption over in Nigeria and their oil. We also have Russia that is arguing over over transit fees and shutting off its oil supplies to Western Europe. So oil should be a lot higher than what it is. And even though we see oil around $52, our gasoline prices, I don't believe they've corrected to the same degree that oil has. I know kerosene and diesel oil is still trading at 269, around that area, 269, 279, wherever, you know, depending you're at in this country. So what impacts the consumer in this country hasn't changed all that much when it comes to oil. So we also have OPEC that's going to be considering cutting more oil per day coming February 1st. They want to cut production another 500,000 barrels. So oil is not over. We do believe oil will be rising again, and it's a temporary, perhaps to stave off the inflation.
Right. Well, I think that we're living in very, very uncertain times. And after carefully analyzing President Bush's speech he gave last Wednesday, where he said that the conflict playing out in the greater Middle East is more than a military campaign. The campaign playing out in the greater Middle East is more than a military conflict. It is the decisive struggle of our time. It is the decisive struggle of our time. What's he talking about? I think he's talking about the coming war with Iran, and when we get back, we'll talk a little bit about the implications of the war that I think they're planning. Well, Melody, certainly I'm very, very concerned that we're going to war with Iran. I mean, why would you have two carrier groups there, you know, in the the Persian Gulf. It's sort of like when we brought all of our military naval forces into the Gulf of Tonkin and just waiting for some sort of an incident so we could justify going to war with Vietnam. Now, the American people didn't want to go to war with Vietnam. The Vietnamese people didn't want to go to war with America, but the people who were in charge here in the United States wanted that war. They actually faked the Gulf of Tonkin incident, and 58,000 American boys died, and nobody here was ever held responsible for their death. Robert McNamara, who certainly knew this was a fraudulent, you know, is now the permanent honorary vice chairman of the Trilateral Commission. He is on all sorts of committees. He's very, very comfortable. He's certainly involved in the occult. He's one of the board of directors of the World Future Society, which is an occult organization, along with Marie Strong and Barbara Marx Hubbard, who used to be there. Their logo was a circle made up of three sixes. 666. Robert McNamara was never held responsible for the 58,000 American boys who died senselessly in Vietnam. And I feel that we're bringing now all of our military and our naval forces, focusing them on the Persian Gulf, the Gulf of Tonkin all over again. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I agree. I do believe things are heating up. We have Iran. The president of Iran is again, visiting Venezuela. I believe this is his second time in so many months. And I believe things are heating up over there. And I don't believe people really understand, or maybe they're beginning to understand, that if we do go to war, what will happen once we do, how it will affect us and around the world. And it is hard to believe that you don't hear. What's disturbing is you don't hear a lot of discussion of why we shouldn't. All you hear is discussions of why we should and, you know, how bad everything is. But we do have the buildup, and there were several key phrases in his speech last week that leads me to believe, no doubt, that we're going to war with Iran.
And I really think that the average American needs to stop and think. The American people don't want to go to war. The Iranian people don't want to go to war,
no.
But the leaders do. And remember, our CIA brought the Ayatollahs to power in 1979. What was that, 28 years ago, 27 years ago? Why would we have done something that stupid? And didn't they realize that these were radical Muslim clerics? And they absolutely did. And so why did we bring them to power? Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Melody Cederstrom, and certainly we're talking about finances this hour, but we're also talking about the imminent war with Iran. If you listened to the president last Wednesday, and if you heard his interview on 60 Minutes, actually over the weekend on Sunday, it was very obvious that he's planning on going to war. Well, he was asked, well, you know, only 30% of the population, the American people, support your president, your president's policies. They don't want to continue supporting their war in Iraq. And the president said, I don't care. I'm the president. I make the decisions. And they said, well, but, you know, the Congress doesn't support you either. I don't care. I'm the president. What about Iran? Well, if they're providing supplies that are being used to kill our boys, we're going to have to take care of it. And ladies and gentlemen, they're planning on a war with Iran. There's no question at all. I mean, why else would we have brought another carrier group into the... that'll be two carrier groups stationed in the Persian Gulf. I mean, you're just asking for, you know, an excuse, another Gulf of Tonkin incident, and where is the outcry from our Christian leaders, from our conservative leaders, from our congressional leaders, from... You know, from certainly our legislators, leaders, and there is none. Everybody's sort of going along, and certainly the media is saying, well, you know, he's the president, he has the right. We did not elect a dictator. We did not elect somebody to take us into war. And yet that seems to be the policy. He's taken us into Afghanistan to catch Osama bin Laden, and we didn't catch Osama bin Laden. So why didn't we just pull out? No, we had to keep our troops there. Then we had to invade Iraq because of weapons of mass destruction. And George Bush said, see, there was nobody more surprised than I was that we didn't find any. Well, I don't know why. The CIA had told them there weren't any there. Yeah, repeatedly they'd told him. But, you know, he said, well, we used our best intelligence. Yeah, but there was people that you knew what they were going to say ahead of time, because the decision was made to go to war with Iraq long before the 9/11 attack. And any of our listeners who want to question that, I suggest you get the book written by Paul O'Neill. It's called The Price of Loyalty, and on page, I think it's 96. Paul O'Neill, the Secretary of the Treasury, in 2001, tells that in January and February of 2001, he attended meetings of the National Security Council, where Paul Wolfowitz and Cheney and Rumsfeld were talking about how we would be able to get the American people to go along with their preemptive attack on Iraq, and that already divided up the oil. So, I mean, the thing is that just, I don't think they're being forthright for the American people, but I fear the implications of this attack on Iran, because what do you think that'll do to the price of oil? What do you think that'll do to the price of, you know, gold and silver and other things here in America?
Well, I think the prices will rise to where we don't want them to. And you know what, Dr. Stan, it's almost like people aren't saying anything. No one can, because he's just going to do whatever he wants to anyway. He said so. And he'll just continue with whatever he started. And all they're doing now is conditioning the American people to the point that it will happen. And so oil will skyrocket, gold will skyrocket, and for those of us owning gold, that's great. But you know what? I'd rather see gold at 600 than to see it at 1500 and be at war with Iran, because it will affect us over here. I mean, even the war in Iraq affected us over here, but even more so with Iran. And it will be nuclear, and, you know, all that stuff has to travel around the world, and it's just going to affect so many people. And we don't know where it's going to stop, because then you have to bring in Israel, and we'll have, is there anything that can stop them, Dr. Stan?
Only if Nancy Pelosi would threaten to impeach him and bring charges against the president for doing that. And I don't think Nancy Pelosi will do that. I think she's playing her part. I think she's doing exactly what she's supposed to do. She says one thing, but then she says, oh, well, there's nothing we can do. After all, he's the commander-in-chief. She is the third most powerful person in the country today. She has the power to stop this foolishness, and she has no intention of doing it. So everybody is playing their part, just like President Ahmadinejad over there in Iran is playing his part.
Okay.
And I've often said, he looks like he came from Central Casting. When I hear what he has to say, I'm sure he came from Central Casting. He is playing a part, and that part is leading the world towards World War III. Because when you start a war, you never know how it's going to end. And why would anybody think that, you know, we could just go over there and just kill a few tens of thousands of Iranians and then just everything would be just fine? I mean, look at the mess they've made in Iraq, and of course, look at the mess we've made in Afghanistan. Do you really believe that the people who've lied to us in the past and have failed repeatedly are going to be able to do a better job, especially when they're not being forthright and telling us that the real plan has always been to go to war with Iran? How do I know? I've read William Crystal tell Ted Koppel back in 2002-2003 that we intended to go after Iran and Syria and Korea, and of course down the line Saudi Arabia, and it's all right there in the interview with Crystal and Ted Koppel there on Nightline, and it's amazing how few people have ever heard of that interview. But William Crystal is one of the people who is behind those who control George Bush. He is simply a figurehead for the power elite who rules this country. Well, anyway, of course, certainly gold and silver have been knocked down pretty well, although I saw silver was responding fairly well today, wasn't it?
Well, the markets were closed today. On Friday, we had a good day. Gold was up almost $13, and silver was up 43 cents. The aftermarket, gold is up, is pretty much flat, and silver is up another 2 cents. So we have gold in the aftermarket trading at $12.90. So,
you're talking about 6/12 or
silver?
No, I'm sorry. Silver's trading what?
Silver is trading at $12.90.
Okay.
Yeah. and we still have gold trading around $626. So they tried to hit it down, but we're going to see these ups and downs as we see gold rise with their manipulations, but they've been doing very well. There's been a lot of physical buying in the gold and silver. In fact, we're having a very good month here at Discount Gold and Silver Trading. In fact, it might be one of the better months that we've had since we've been in business. So it's been extremely busy. And usually the first couple of weeks in January are usually on the slow side because you have the holiday hangover. And, you know, people are just, you know, waking up after the holidays. So it's a little unusual. So I believe what happened after Thanksgiving when we saw the dollar take the plunge the day after Thanksgiving, that kind of woke up people to some degree, not a lot, you know, certainly not the general populace, but at least a few people, and they understand that holding dollars is probably not the best thing to do, that if they want to keep what they have, they don't want to lose what they have. Gold is the only investment that will protect what they have. And so, and then as we see things heat up and after the speeches and knowing where we're headed, the interest in gold has certainly picked up.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, because I know that that's encouraging to you after you're on the front lines of this battle. Well, I think that it's an excellent buying time for people, because if you look around the world and see what's happening, you realize that we're on the edge of a financial precipice. And what's really so interesting, of course, in the past you've had all of the European banks associated with the euro currency and the European central banks all holding the line and dumping gold to try to drop the price down. And then we heard rumors last week that the Italian central bank was thinking of breaking ranks and beginning to accumulate gold. Now, you have to have something behind your currency to make it stable. A fiat currency, a paper currency, has no intrinsic value, and once people begin to lose confidence in it, well, then the whole house of cards comes down, and it sounds like the Italians were thinking of breaking ranks with the other central banks. Had you heard that rumor?
Yes, I did. I have heard that they are beginning to buy gold, and so it's just another country, central bank, that understands where we're at with the U.S. dollar being the world reserve currency.
Well, the thing is, if you could exchange a worthless piece of paper for something of intrinsic value, which is gold, why, you'd be foolish not to do it. Certainly are. I mean, the central banks of the world have been trying for years to maintain this fiat currency, and the only way they could keep the price of gold and silver down, and other commodities as well, was simply to dump massive amounts of paper and just keep printing more and more paper. But eventually you come to the point where if you continue doing that, you have so much paper out there that eventually the paper becomes worthless, as it was at the time of the Revolutionary War when we printed something called the cotton nettle, and the phrase, as worthless as a cotton nettle, came to be commonplace. And we saw the same thing in Germany in the 20s and early 30s. We saw the same thing in Russia in the early 90s, and we saw it in Argentina here a few years ago. But the whole world really faces a financial collapse because you have fiat money every place, and one day when people realize that they're expanding the money about 10 to 12%, and I'm talking about money and credit and those monetary increments, they're expanding it probably at 12% a year. That's the rate of inflation. And when they tell you that we've got a 2% inflation, well, the same people tell you that tells us about the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, or the fact that we're going to bring back Osama bin Laden dead or alive. That's why we're going to Afghanistan to capture the wicked Osama bin Laden. Or we had to go to war in Vietnam because of the Gulf of Tonkin incident. And they were all contrived. They were all not true. Well, the day of reckoning is coming for the dollar, as far as I'm concerned, in our monetary system. And the people are positioning themselves, at least, well, it's going to be a difficult time, but hopefully some of them will survive. But the time is late. People are going to have to start making their preparations. They're going to have to get out of debt. And when we get back, we'll be talking to Melody Cederstrom. And, of course, we'll welcome your calls. If you have a question for Melody, here at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Melody Cederstrom, and we're talking about really what's happening financially. And Melody is saying that this has really been a very, very good month. Do you think people are buying simply because they recognize the price of gold and silver have come down, and they're going to get it while it's low?
Well, what's interesting is a large part of, I mean, I still have my old standby gold bugs who understand the value and really understand what's going on. But the new customers that are coming in are really concerned about the dollar. They don't want to lose the value of their purchasing power. And they also know that being in the market, it is a rigged market. And they understand that they can't beat or they can't win and they can't get ahead in a rigged market. And that's exactly what all the financial parties are. They're all rigged, and you won't make any money. You'll just lose what you have. And so they're understanding that. They're looking at their quarterly statements, and it's just like, well, you know, the Dow went from this to this, and you know, my investments are going down. And they don't understand that it's only a select few that is keeping the market up. They don't understand that it's the working group of financial markets that's keeping it up. They know it's rigged. They might not understand it, but they do understand they need to protect their purchasing power, and they are understanding that gold is probably the safest investment out there. And I don't, and people get so much information off the website, and I've had a lot of calls lately about currencies and about owning CDs and bonds and different currencies. And folks, you have to be so very careful. And if you want to play it safe and you want to protect what you have, the best way to do it is by buying gold and silver and taking possession of it. And when you look at some of these bonds and these CDs that are backed by foreign currencies, even if it's the euro that's backed a little bit by gold, I mean, the euro really, it doesn't even have a constitution, and it will be affected when our dollar falls. I mean, so there's even discussions out there that the euro won't be around after a period of time. So you do have to be careful. There's been discussions about CDs and bonds in fiat currencies. And so you have to be very careful when you put your funds. And there's a lot of discussions with these currency markets that they're insured with the FDIC. Well, you know, I wouldn't put my hard-earned money in and trust the FDIC in covering it. Because when you have a government that's bankrupt and you're going to be paid in fiat currency in a falling, failing U.S. dollar, I mean, I don't understand why anybody would take the risk of putting your funds someplace and not playing it safe.
Well, I think that the biggest thing is that if you have an investment, you do not want it in any way tied to a fiat currency that is being inflated at the rate of 10 to 14% a year, because you're losing every year between 10 and 14% of your investment. What you want is something, you may never get rich, but what you want to do is preserve what you've worked so hard for. And I pity the average individual who listens to the financial advisor who says, play it safe. Invest in bonds, you'll get only 4 or 5%, yes, and you're going to be losing about 10% a year, and you're not going to make that up in volume, and we'll be right back here with Melody. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Melody was saying that a lot of people are calling her and asking her about investing in CDs. I mean, you know, you get a little higher interest rate on that, or investing in bonds, things of that sort. But anything of that sort, the increment that you're dealing with is the fiat monetary system, a fiat money that is losing value at about somewhere between 10 and 14% a year. Remember, when the government tells you our inflation rate is 2 or 3% a year, they're not telling you the truth. Why aren't they telling you the truth? Because they don't want you to understand what is happening to the value of our currency. The Federal Reserve System was established to give us a stable currency that would maintain its value. And over the past 100 years, they've destroyed the value of that currency, so it's worth 2 or 3 cents of what it was, you know, back, in 1913. And of course, see, we've enriched the bankers, and we've impoverished the people. But, you know, the people think they're rich because they've got all this money in the bank. And they've got their CDs and their bonds and their stocks and all of these things, but they're all invested in a monetary increment that, so they are redeemable in more of the monetary increments that are redeemable in more of the monetary increments. At one time, the dollar used to say, this note is legal tender for all debts, public and private, and is redeemable in lawful currency at any branch of the Treasury or the Federal Reserve System. And then one day back in the 1965 era, we woke up and the new currency said, this note is legal tender for all debts, public and private, and it's not redeemable in anything. And of course, since then, it's all been downhill. Well, Melody, if you were advising your people who call you, what would you tell them?
Well, what we do things a little bit differently here. We give advice. We look at the person's portfolio, what other investments they have. A rule of thumb that we follow is of their hard assets, a minimum, and this is a minimum of 30%, should be in gold and silver. Many of clients, if they understand what's going on, will carry 50%, and really, my view, it should be even higher than that. So it is an individual decision based on your or the individual's investment objectives. But you do need to protect what you have. We take that 30% or 50% or 80%, and of that, 20% should be silver and 80% should be gold. Gold will protect your purchasing power. Silver is mostly an industrial metal that is somewhat monetary. I expect to see it become more monetary metal, but it will still fluctuate. It's volatile based on industry. And if you believe that industry is going to go down, then we could see have a little more volatility in silver. So your gold will protect your purchasing power, and that's what you need to have the bulk in. 80% should be in gold, 20% should be in silver.
All right, fine. And would you like to get your telephone number out and, of course, your webpage?
The telephone number is 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. The website address is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. That is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. And if you'd like to email me any questions, you can do that at discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com.
Well, now what's going to happen to all these people that are really head over heels in debt? They've got a major credit card debt, and they're having to borrow money on other credit cards to make their monthly payments. They've got their big house payments. They've got their car payments. They've got maybe the furniture payments. What's going to happen to these people?
They'll probably lose everything. They certainly don't have jobs in which they can help them out of their problem. It's very difficult to get out of debt. In fact, I was watching a program this weekend of this fellow. He does credit counseling. And he was talking about these people who are just thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. And there's this one lady he was helping, but she was $100,000 in credit cards. And she didn't have a clue. She didn't have a clue that she was that far in debt. I think it was like $94,000, and it was all credit card debt. So you do need to get out of debt and work as hard as you can getting out of those credit cards.
I don't know that, but the interest on the credit cards will just eat you alive. What's the credit card interest rate at the present time? Do we know?
Oh, my. It can be anywhere from, 8% on up.
And of course, they used to call that usury. Well, that was, of course, when we had a legitimate society. Now, of course, that's just the way that it is. Too bad. But people don't understand. The system is rigged. They win, we lose. And, of course, once we turn the printing of our money over to the privately owned central bank, why, of course, we sign the doom of our own nation. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and it takes a long time, really, to begin to think, to understand what's going on today. Interest rates determine, of course, what happens in the economy. And if you lower the interest rates, you make it very easy for people to borrow money. And they can borrow money, they can buy houses, they can buy cars, they can invest, they can start new businesses. Raise the interest rates and it becomes increasingly expensive to do this sort of thing. Raise the interest high enough, why you don't have hardly any exchange there at all, and then the whole economic system collapses. And that's what you sometimes have to do if you want to bring inflation under control. That's what Paul Volcker, to his credit, did back in 1918. When he raised the interest rate up to almost, 22%, the only way they could just shut down the economy and stop an inflation that had run rampant since President Nixon had taken the dollar off of the gold standard on August 15, 1971. So in 9 years, of course, they ran up this massive inflation rate, and then Paul Volcker did what was right, and then we started a long progressive climb from 1980-81 up. We've had a few ups and downs, but, you know, I think we've reached the point there is no way out of the mess they've got us into. If they raise the interest rates, why, they destroy the economy. The lower the interest rates, they destroy the monetary system. So which one do you think they're going to do at the present time, Melody?
I think they will raise interest rates. I think they'll have to raise interest rates, and I don't know how they'll do it. If they'll do it a quarter point each time, or if they'll do a half point, but I do believe they'll raise interest rates.
And this will have really a tremendous dampening effect on the economy, and certainly already many of Ford is moving overseas. General Motors has done away with 37,000 jobs in America, and remember, every one of those jobs that was reflected in about 5 or 6 other jobs. In other words, some fellow got a paycheck, he spent the money, it generated other jobs, and those people spent the money, it generated other jobs. So every good-paying job, like a General Motors job, actually produced about 6 good jobs here in the United States, service people serving other people. And Ford has done exactly the same thing. I've forgotten how many jobs they've got out from underneath, but probably a fairly comparable number. And those good-paying jobs are gone forever. Well, there'll be other jobs there, working at McDonald's, working at Home Depot, working at Walmart. But, of course, these are not the good-paying jobs that we've had in the past.
You know what, Doug?
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Melody Cederstrom. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California, at 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And during the break, I was simply pointing out that General Motors has lost 37,000 jobs in Ford, a comparable amount. Both Ford and General Motors are investing heavily in other countries, predominantly in China. And, of course, then the jobs are going to be transferred to China. Chinese cars are going to be coming into America. They're going to be cheap. They're talking about inexpensive cars, about $8,000. Isn't that great? Mm-hmm. But what about the jobs, of course, that we've lost in the process of getting the cheap cars and the other cheap products in here? And, of course, eventually, while we're seeing the transfer, the entire monetary base of the United States to other countries, and that is part of the plan. It is laid out in the Earth Charter, which is the Mein Kampf for everything going on today. If you have not read it, you need to. You need to understand this is written by 3 of the wealthiest men in the world, and all of them are deeply involved in the occult. It is the master plan. I believe it comes from the dark side for the transformation of the world, but with that is the destruction of America. Because point 10A of the Earth Charter, and you can get it on the Internet. If you can't get it, we'll be glad to send you a copy. It is actually stored in the Ark of Hope, which is the Luciferian counterpart of the Ark of the Covenant. Point 10A refers to equitable distribution of wealth within nations and between nations. And that's what's so important. That's what this is really all about, is the transfer of America's health and jobs and future and destiny to other nations. as we raise their living standards and lower ours. So go ahead, Melody.
You know, I believe it was only the people here in the United States that could stop anything, but they have been conditioned, and you can see how this plan was orchestrated. People who had the great jobs with GM, with all the manufacturing plants, they've actually became, and I don't want to offend anybody, but a lot of them became lazy. I mean, it's just like they didn't care about losing their jobs because they gave them an option or they gave them a way to fund their lifestyle through the homes that they had. So they were able to replace those good-paying jobs with debt from their homes. And, you know, people, when they find out that they've been had, which I believe they're beginning to understand, they're going to be very upset. But have the people here in this country become lazy? I mean, do they really even want factory jobs anymore? Because they don't have them, and they were able to live off this fabricated wealth from their homes. And they've been told that they don't have to work hard, and they believe that they don't have to work hard. I mean, it is just an incredible when you can see how these people have been just, I can't think of a better word than conditioned and brainwashed into and pushed along as a herd. I mean, it truly is amazing, Dr. Stan. I mean, it is mind-boggling to the degree and depth of which they've been able to move all these people to just the way they wanted them and make them these little robots that they are.
It really is. But first, it's the old adage that you can enslave any animal in the world that will first become dependent upon you. And the once proud and independent Americans have become dependent upon their employers and upon government. And as long as things are good, why should they be concerned? But I fear that those days of good are about to end. I believe that the good times are very soon going to end. Our government anticipates that. That's why they passed the Military Commission Act and the John Warner Defense Appropriations Act. That's why they're building bunkers in Washington, D.C. for the government officials so that they will be safe when the chaos comes. And I believe chaos is coming, whether it'll be monetary collapse, whether it'll be civil unrest, whether it'll be a contrived epidemic, whether it'll be a nuclear attack. I don't know what it is, but I do know the government is planning. They know what's going to happen. They're laying in their supplies for their people and for their elite. But, of course, they're not making any preparations for the average individual. We've got Ray calling from Santa Cruz, and let's see what he has to say. And, again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. How are you doing, Ray?
I'm doing pretty good. I had a question for Melanie. I understand that the Chinese are lowering the yen. What kind of effect would that have on goods purchased, American goods purchased in China and American goods or Chinese goods that were purchased over here? Would that have an effect on the price of...
Well, I don't think they're lowering the yen. I think they're
raising the yen. Yeah.
Okay, well, Melody, what impact will that have?
Well, they said they were going to raise it, but, you know, I don't think they'll do anything all too soon. You know, they're just in there playing the game along with everybody else. And naturally, if they raise their currency, the products here in the U.S. will become more expensive. But on the other hand, the products leaving our country should become a little less. But, again, the matter of the point is, will they do it?
Yeah,
well, I don't think it really matters.
So the question is, why would the Chinese communists, why would they want to help us, you know, by raising the value of their currency to any degree? I think maybe it's gone up 1 or 2%, but that has not made that much difference. Mm-hmm. And when you go to Walmart or Home Depot or Target or the other stores where they get most of their things from communist China, the thing is that the Chinese communists are looking after their economy. They want to protect their people. Of course, the people, the leaders of this country, are not interested in protecting our jobs or our people. In fact, they're doing everything they can to destroy our industrial base and to offshore our better-paying jobs. And even some of our poorer-paying jobs are being offshore. They're even talking about trying to offshore some jobs at McDonald's. They haven't figured out how they're going to do that, but they'll probably come up with some way of doing it. When you drive, in to get your order at McDonald's, and the voice says, "What do you want?" and they've got a strong Indian accent, you'll know what's happened. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah.
But I think that they have really, if they were to raise the price of the yen, the value of the yen, it would raise the price of the things we buy in this country from communist China. They keep talking about doing it. They have not done it, and we're not about to force them to.
I've been speaking to, I've spoken to a couple engineers that I know, electrical engineers, and they've all said the same thing that, actually, it's this whole job thing started to happen pretty much in 2000. They had the big layoffs in 2000 in the Valley, in the Silicon Valley. They laid off, I think it was 15,000 people or something like that in the electronics business. And now, according to a fellow that I spoke to the other day, who was an engineer for Sun Microsystems, He was saying that they're going to have some really very heavy layoffs very shortly.
Now, is he concerned about his job?
Oh, yeah. He's thinking about changing careers because it's so bad. I mean, they'll just axe anybody that, it doesn't matter whether you're doing a good job or...
Well, I think you have to understand that, Ray, what's happening is they're actually bringing people from, say, India or other countries who are well-educated and speak English. They're bringing them in here under special visas because they'll work for less. Now, they're not supposed to be able to do that. They're only supposed to bring them in if there's nobody here to fill the job, but they're getting around that. So what they're going to do is drive the price of labor down. That's what it's all about, is to break back of the unions.
Yeah.
And then, of course, with so many things like architecture, even many engineering jobs, something that where you're laying out plans, you can actually get them done in India for about a third or a quarter of the price here. They're actually having doctors over in India, read x-rays. Read CT scans, read MRIs, read ophthalmic pictures in the back of the eye. Many of the doctors who think that they're so secure here are increasingly finding that jobs like this can be done far cheaper halfway around the world, and they can certainly they can fax the replies back, the email the replies back. They can send them the x-rays and the MRIs and the CT scans electronically. They can get the reply electronically almost as quickly as if you had your local radiologist do it. Mm-hmm. And this is how you're going to, of course, drive the cost of medicine down, but you're really not going to drive it down. What you're going to do is just put the doctors here out of business.
What is the point in learning a trade, profession anymore? For an American-born person... what's the point in even learning a profession, if they're going to do this? I think what they're trying to do, like you said, you mentioned before many times, is that they want to eliminate a class of people, and specifically, I think, the middle class of people, and then just have a two-tiered society.
I think that's exactly what they're trying to do. What do you think, Melody?
I agree. And, these kids, that are going to school, to colleges, and they're spending thousands and thousands of dollars to get their degrees, they won't have jobs. They won't have jobs. I mean, China and India are producing more college graduates than our country.
Yeah.
And and they're going in the areas where they have to fulfill the jobs that are needed.
Yeah, well, I think it's getting really late in the game for.
Well, the thing is that most people aren't going to get concerned until their ox gets gored.
Right.
The best thing, and I hate to say this, but the best thing that could happen, if their ox does get gored and they will get involved with us in this struggle to save America before it's too late.
Yeah.
Now, some people think it's already too late, but if I already believed that, I would have given up a long time ago, and I'd be out playing golf and traveling and seeing the world. But I believe that our job is to let people understand But what is happening is not happening by accident. There is a master plan. You can read it. It's called the Earth Charter.
Charter, yeah.
It calls for a new spirituality. It calls for the redistribution of our wealth individually and nationally. And, of course, equitable distribution of wealth within nations and between nations. Now, that's not the wealth of the wealthy. That is your wealth, my wealth, Melody's wealth.
Yeah, it's really...
All right, fine. Anything else, Larry?
Well, you know, President Bush's speech, I think if you give him an inch, he'll take a mile. As far as, you know, them letting him, you know, get away with having all the money he wants for this war, I think it's $2 billion for the troop increase. I think it's, what, $2 billion a month or something, or... I don't recall the figures, but you know, if they give him an inch, he'll take a mile. If they let him put these troops over there, he's going to want more troops.
Well, I think you have
he's
to realize,
Ray,
that we spend more on our military than literally all the rest of the world combined. Certainly, as much as the next 20 most extravagant nations of the world together.
Yeah.
Why do we have such a big military? Are we defending ourselves from the Russians? Are we defending ourselves from the Chinese communists? No. I mean, we're doing everything we can to build up the military of the Chinese communists. We're finding one excuse after another to finance the military of the Russians. I mean, certainly we're going to help them. Here's a country that has massive reserves now, about $300 billion in reserves, but we're giving them money so that they can decommission their old intercontinental ballistic missiles and build new ones. Why would we do that? We have to be over there giving them money so they can destroy their chemical weapons so that they can build new chemical weapons. And why are we doing all of these things unless nothing that is going on is really as it appears to be? It's all a facade. We are creating the best enemies money could buy in preparation for the terrible war that lies ahead.
Yeah, well, if they ever catch Osama, then...
They're never going to catch Osama. I believe he's been dead for some time, but they're not going to tell us that. We have to have an enemy. And do you know a better boogeyman than a 6'6" it's Arab with a turban
with
a scraggly beard?
With a kidney problem, too.
Right. Anything else, Ray?
No, I'm sure.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank
and
you,
our, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And when I say Osama's been led dead, I will point out that one of the leaders of the neocons, a man named Michael Ledeen, has said this going back almost a year, that Osama bin Laden is dead. Certainly he was on dialysis. How long do you think you'll last on a dialysis living in a cave in Pakistan? And you're not going to. And we haven't seen Osama bin Laden for a long period of time. But if he did die, do you honestly believe that the government would tell you he was dead? We have to have Osama bin Laden there. He is the figurehead of this whole Islamic terrorist movement. And we have to rally the American people behind our government to protect us from Osama bin Laden. And it's sort of the old story of the wag the dog. You manipulate the people into believing there's an enemy and going into a war. And that's what this is really all about.
Well, he will have to be replaced, though, and he'll probably be replaced with the president of Iran, I would think. I mean, eventually he'll have to be replaced by another person that we go after. They eliminated Saddam.
Well, I think Ahmadinejad's probably as good a candidate as any. After all, he's got a little straggly beard, but he makes all these statements. It's almost as if a script had been written at CIA headquarters.
Yep.
And, of course, I believe, of course, he's playing a part. Nobody could be as provocative as he is, trying to inflame the passions of the people of the West unless he was trying to promote World War III. And why would anybody in their right mind want to do that? And nobody ever asked that question. They just take everything at face value.
Yes, they do. And you know what? You know, when we talk about the amount of funds that are being funneled to this war, if you ask for funds for the troops, that won't be denied.
I know. We have to support our troops. We want to support our troops when we get them out of there. So they stop being killed. When there was going to be a war between the Israelis and the Arabs in 1948, and the British controlled Palestine, what did the British do? They picked up and left. And they figured that the Jews would fight the Arabs until they came to a truce, and they would have a truce, and that's exactly what happened, until both sides were exhausted. How many more Americans are we going to kill over there senselessly? If we got out, the Sunnis and the Shias would fight it out, and they would establish eventually their own countries, and they'll live happily ever after. We don't want that. Melody, let's get your telephone number and your webpage out one more time.
The telephone number is 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. And the website is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. Discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. And don't forget to spell out A-N-D.
All right, fine. And Chris, if you need some advice or suggestions, why, Melody does support us, but we support Melody as well. And we'll be back in just a moment to wrap up this hour. Well, Melody, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up this evening's program.
It's my turn. Okay. We do a great job here, Dr. Stan. And what we try to do, we base our investments in gold, silver with clear logic, and that's how we give our advice. You will understand why you're buying what you're buying. And we base it on the customer's investment objective. We base it on what they're looking to invest, if they plan on making a monthly investment, or if they're going to make a one and only investment, or investments over a period of time. We look at what they already have in their portfolio, and we try to diversify them to give them a stable portfolio in gold and silver.
Let's just get to Jeff. He just called in, and I want to get to him before the program is over. Jeff, did you have a question for Melody?
Yes, Melody, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yes. My question is this. Quite a bit of gold and silver, and I've gotten it from a lot of different people. And one of the things I've noticed is, you know, like right now I'm in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and the dealer over here says, yeah, if we go into Iran, no big deal. You know, wars don't affect the price of silver. Then, I've bought some from another gentleman that has a radio show, and he says, hey, if we go into Iran, get ready for silver to hit $100 an ounce overnight. I mean, what's your opinion on? Do you find there's that much of a dichotomy between opinions within dealers in the business?
Well, I believe that the opinions of dealers in the business, for the reasons you need to buy gold, everybody has an accurate view. But when it comes down to the product and what you need to buy, it varies from dealer to dealer, to state to state. Whatever they're selling is what you'll get. Silver, I think, can be a great investment. If we go to war with Iran, you're going to see gold rise and silver will tag along. Silver is still industrial, so you can't forget that. And so silver will do very well. It will rise greater percentage-wise, but silver won't protect your purchasing power like gold will.
Okay, now
Go ahead.
Okay. Now, do you see? Let's just say, okay, the price of gold. Now, I haven't bought a lot of gold, mainly junk silver. But let's just say, you know, you bought a few thousand in gold. Now, the night that it becomes public knowledge on Limbaugh and Hannity that hey, we're going into Iran, do you see that it could be an overnight type of situation where it would rise a couple of few hundred bucks overnight?
You know what? I don't have a crystal ball.
And I think I have to understand it's manipulated. What it should do and what it's going to do are two entirely different things, and you hang on there.
Okay.
And this is Dr. Stan, and Jeff was just calling from Denver. He wanted to know what's going to happen if we do go to a war with Iran. Are gold and silver going to go up? One fella he talked to said the silver is not going to go up. The other one said it's going to go to $100 an ounce. And Melody says she doesn't know. And I don't know either. I can tell you one thing for certain. It will do what the powers who manipulate everything want it to do. That's one thing I can tell you for certain.
You know what I do know, Dr. Stan? I do know that gold will protect people's purchasing power and will keep them from losing what they have over any other investment out there.
I think
that's why it's so important to have it in your portfolio. I do know gold is going to rise, and I know silver is going to rise, but they will rise accordingly to the metal that they are. And so that's how you have to look at gold and silver, for what, even platinum and palladium. You have to look at the metal and what it is and what it does. And usually if someone is selling silver, they don't have gold to sell. Everybody has found their little niche, and that's what we do things differently here. We look at everything. We don't look at just one gold product or one silver product. We look at everything and describe and tell the customers the difference so we can make, along with the customer, a great portfolio that performs very well.
Okay, well, Melody, we're out of time. And Jeff, thanks very much for calling.
Thank you very much.
And
the
final analysis, we're just going to have to wait and see. But I think we're going to war with Iran. I think it's a matter of when. I don't know when, but I think we've got to keep our eyes very carefully focused on what's going on. God bless you. Good night, Melody. And
good night,
Jeff.
Stan.
Okay.
God bless you.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan. And certainly I think people begin to make their preparations accordingly. What should you do? Well, you need to get out of debt, because certainly I think we live in very uncertain times. And after that, if you have money left over, why, I think you ought to invest in things that will hold its value, recognizing we have a fiat money system. And throughout all history, going back to ancient times, I'm talking about ancient Greece, ancient Rome, fiat money systems have never worked. And as Aristotle said, there's absolutely nothing wrong with a fiat money system as long as we have perfect authority and godlike wisdom in kings. So you need to get a little pamphlet we've written. It's called The History of Money. It's inexpensive. And then, of course, we have our talk on the financial tsunami, and a syllabus goes with that that will give you a good overview of what's going on and make several recommendations that I think are very valid. So again, if you'd be interested in getting those items, the Financial Tsunami Talk, and then of course it's available in DVD or in VHS format, and then the syllabus that goes with it, because you want to have the syllabus, you can have the documentation and know what we're talking about. The telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Then of course we carry the book, The A Creature from Jekyll Island, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy by Professor Sutton, and then, of course, the book, Fiat Money Inflation in France. Those three will give you more understanding of what's really going on economically than what you're going to get by going to the university and taking a four-year course in monetary systems. Understand it's all rigged. When you understand it's all rigged, it all makes sense. If you think you're looking for a logical explanation, you're simply not going to find it. So if you'd like to get the book, Creature from Jekyll Island, which in my estimation is the best book we carry, and then, of course, the Federal Reserve Conspiracy, and then Fiat Money Inflation in France, the story of what happened in France following the French Revolution in 1789, when they did exactly what we're doing today. And then, of course, the talk, Financial Tsunami, the syllabus, Financial Tsunami, and then, of course, our little pamphlet, The History of Money, which I think will give you a beautiful overview of what's happened in the past, and, of course, what happened, of course, in ancient Venice and ancient Florence when they had tremendous prosperity by printing paper money. But, of course, what happened when that paper money failed. And so we ask, of course, to pray for America, to pray for revival, to pray for our leaders and ministers, but please pray for my ministry of Radio Liberty. We're on the front lines of a battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Christian civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and, well, the views of our callers, guests this evening for the second hour, Cheryl Hancock. And Cheryl is a missionary to Israel, and she has gone over in the past. She's been there and working with the Palestinians, working with the Jewish people, trying to bring them into a personal relationship with the Lord. And she's was somewhat ill, but now she's feeling better. She's going to go back. She's planning on being there for another year. And she's on the front lines of a battle that I would love to be in. But I'm getting a little bit old for that, and besides that, it's pretty hard to do all my 5 hours a day of radio for talk over there. So we, of course, have in the past supported Cheryl, and we will try to support her again now that she's going back over to Israel. And, of course, the thing is that there is going to be another war in the Near East. There's no question that certainly there's a civil unrest in the Palestinian area, but whether it's Fatah or whether it's Hamas, they both hate the Israelis, and they certainly want to destroy them. The United States government's doing everything they can to prepare Egypt for the coming war with Israel, and we certainly have been refurbishing their military helicopters. We've been refurbishing their howitzers. We've been giving them large sums of money so they could modernize their military in preparation for the coming war with Israel. And you say, that doesn't make sense. Well, of course, most of what's going on in the world doesn't make sense. And if you ever understand it doesn't make sense, then it really, of course, begins to fit into focus. So certainly recently we've been giving large sums of money to the Fatah and providing several thousand rifles to Fatah so for the Palestinian authority over there, so they can use that to fight Hamas, which was the democratically elected government. I thought we wanted democratic elected governments. Apparently we only want the democratically elected governments that we want in power. And then there's increasing unrest in Jordan because, of course, they've got almost 1.8 million to 2 million Iraqis who fled from Iraq. And these are the people who had enough money to get into Jordan. The prices have just gone wild in Jordan to get a home or any place to live there. Certainly, as you go north into Lebanon, you've got the conflict between the Lebanese government and Hezbollah, which is being financed by Iran. And, of course, we'd brought the Ayatollahs to power back in 1979 after toppling the Shah, knowing full well that we were going to be in a mess like this sometime in the future. Because, you see, the people in charge plan in decades rather than in years like you and I do, or they plan generations ahead. And everything points to the fact we're moving towards a massive war in the Middle East. Certainly, Syria is preparing for war with Israel, and Israel is preparing for war with Syria, and Cheryl's going to be right over in the middle of it. Cheryl, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine. Thank you, Stan.
Will you bring us up to date with what's going on, and from your point of view, and what you anticipate?
Yeah, well, first of all, not too long ago, in the headlines of the Jerusalem Post, the headline said 2007, the year of war for Israel.
Right.
And it read on to say that, first of all, you have Hamas and Fatah, as you were saying, fighting against each other for power. And Hamas seems to be doing a good job of winning this war. And then they do not recognize Israel as a state, so they want to wipe out Israel. So there's one war. Syria is also talking about coming down and taking part of the Golan Heights. They say it's their time now that Hezbollah showed their strength. They need to show their strength also. So Syria could also attack Israel during this time. The Lebanon government is very weak and is being taken over by Hezbollah, as you said. And so they have problems on the northern border of Lebanon.
Hold that thought. We're going to be right back here with Cheryl as we analyze what's going on. And this is the good news. Let me tell you the bad news later. All right, Cheryl, go right ahead.
continue where I was?
Right ahead, right.
Okay. So what is going on with the Hezbollah, if they take over the Lebanese government, they're planning to come down and attack Israel from the northern border. Then you have Iran, also the president of Iran, saying that they need to wipe out Israel. So what does Israel do? Do they stand back and wait for them to shoot a nuke over at Israel, or does Israel do something in between? Of course, they're trying to negotiate right now, but they have plan A and plan B on the table. So all these different neighbors are actually planning to come against Israel, and when? The timing is the problem. We don't know when the timing is, but they say 2007 is going to be a very interesting year.
And I really think it is. I think that this is going to be one of the most frightening, exciting, dangerous years of our lifetime, not only for what's going to be happening in the Middle East, but for what I fear is going to happen here. And if we do get into a war with Iran, it's not a matter of if, but I think it's a matter of when, that's going to have terrible consequences on our economy, with rise in the price of oil and civil unrest. And, you know, in this country, if, for one reason or another, I believe that all of these things are coming to a head here. But anyway, what do you anticipate is going to happen in Israel? You're anticipating that there's going to be a war with, between Israel and its neighbors?
Well, I think, first of all, the Hezbollah or the Hamas and the Fatah situation is going to have to be somehow find a solution resolved. And I don't know how that's going to happen because the Western countries are withholding some money still because they want Abu Mazen, who is the Fatah side, to receive this money and to go on and be the Palestinian state.
But the other side, we want democracy. Mm-hmm. But of course, you know, this fellow wasn't elected. So how can we justify, you know, financing him when the majority of the people voted for the Hamas
Right. I think the Western world is looking at the lesser of the two evils, and they're choosing Abu Mazen on the Fatah. But when I talk to my Palestinian friends, they voted for Hamas. And I asked them, why did they vote for Hamas? They said because Fatah is very corrupt and that they were taking money from the people, they were stealing from the people, the poor people got poor, and the rich people, and the people in Fatah, the people in the government were getting richer. So they thought by voting for Hamas, voting them into government, that Hamas would take care of the people.
And are they, well, Chris, they have the power, are they doing anything? But then they don't have any money, that's the trouble.
Right, well, they haven't been able to do anything yet. As a matter of fact, I know people personally that have died in hospitals because they couldn't afford the medicine, and the money was not trickling down to the hospitals to give to the people.
So it really is such a tragic situation there for the Jews and for the Palestinians. This is what I think people don't understand, is that they could have solved this problem a long time ago. They've never wanted to solve it. They wanted the problem. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're talking to Cheryl Hancock. And how do the Palestinians that you know, are these predominantly Muslim Palestinians, or are these Christian Palestinians?
Well, I know them right across the board, actually. A lot of them that I'm working with are Muslim Palestinians that have become collaborators, which means that they have given up information about attacks on Israel to the Israeli government. And because they did that, they were called traitors by their government, by the Palestinian Authority, or by Hamas, and they had to seek refuge inside of Israel. So most of these men live by themselves with permission to be in Israel. They're Palestinian Muslims, and their families are in the West Bank. They're separated. If they go back to the West Bank, they could be killed. Some of them have been killed, and some of them have been tortured. But what I'm finding out is that they're all out of hope. And the ones that I'm running into, and I'm talking over 100 of them, that they have received the Lord because they're looking for hope. They have hope in nothing. They're seeing that Allah is a God of war and violence, and they're getting nowhere with it. And so they're asking about this Christian God of love, and they're wanting to be baptized. And when they want to be baptized, they're saying, I want to change my religion. I want to become a Christian. And then they learn how to become a believer, a Christian, and they start growing and teaching their people.
And, of course, that's really the only solution to the problems we have over there. But the only trouble is, of course, how do the Israeli authorities feel about your converting Palestinian Muslims to Christianity?
You know what? They love it. Because, you know, once you change a Muslim into a Christian, as a matter of fact, one of the Muslim men sat across the table from me, and he told me, Cheryl, I'm going to blow myself up. In other words, I'm going to be a suicide bomber because I can't afford to feed my family, and the government promised my family $1,000 a month. And so I'm going to blow myself up so they can have $1,000 a month. But I talked the guy out of it, and he became a believer. Now, when they become believers, Christians, then they don't want to go blow themselves up. They have a hope. and they start learning about the Lord. So this man actually got baptized, is a believer, and the Israeli government is seeing that as the Christians come over and they convert, supposedly convert, these Muslim people into Christians, that they don't know, they no longer want to become suicide bombers. They no longer want to live for the cause of being a Muslim and going to this heaven where they get 72 virgins. They don't believe that anymore. They believe the truth. So the Israel covenant is for this.
But of course, if you are a Muslim and you convert to Christianity, why, of course, you know, you're risking your very life, because these tolerant Muslims will kill you, you know, if you leave the faith.
Yeah, and that's what we're having trouble with. As a matter of fact, one guy that is my translator, he was put in prison for 2 years for becoming a believer, and they put bogus charges on him, and they tortured him. He got out when the IDF went in and tore down the walls of the prison, and he's free right now in Israel. And so we're going around and we're talking to different people about the Lord. They're seeing that his life has changed. The only problem is their families are still in the West Bank, and they're under Muslim control. They're under the PA control. Their kids have to go to Muslim schools. They tell the kids that if your father is a traitor, which means if he became a Christian or if he was a collaborator, to turn against them so that they can come and attack the fathers. So the children are turning against them. So these families are separated, and there is no solution to getting the families out.
There's no way that these families could actually come over into Israel?
No, not at this point.
And I suppose the Israelis really don't want more Muslim families coming over there.
Well, that's true. And then plus you have a lot of Muslim families that want to come to Israel just because of the convenience of living in Israel. They have a better life in Israel. And so you don't know who's who. And so they don't know if they should let the family in. There has to be special circumstances. Most of these guys will be going to a court pretty soon, a hearing, and to see if they are really going to be allowed to stay in Israel proper. Since a Palestinian state is going to be made, or is probably going to be made, they want to get all the Palestinians back into the Palestinian areas. They want to get the Jews, who are the settlers, so-called settlers, into the Israeli areas, and make their border. And so some of these guys that I'm working with, these collaborators, may be sent back to the West Bank. If that's the case, then they will be killed.
And of course, really, then, because they've done the right thing, and because they've become Christians, then their lives are going to be sacrificed. I don't think the average person in America can understand the sense of hopelessness that many of these people may actually feel.
No, I'm sure they can't. And when you go over there, the last situation I was in right before I came to America, I went to a house with my translator. A little boy came in crying. He's an Arab boy that was a Palestinian, and this happens to be a family that was allowed to be in Israel. This boy comes in crying, and I asked, why is he crying? And they said, well, he went to buy a can of corn at the store on credit because they didn't have any money. And the man at the store would not give them a can of corn. So this is how poor they are. Of course, we had just arrived with food to give to this family. So we walked out of this situation just shaking our heads how sad the situation is for these people. They are not really allowed to work. They have permission to be in Israel, but they don't have work visas, work permits. They don't have vehicles usually. And so they live under really hard circumstances, but they have given up their lives for either becoming a believer or helping Israel and saving lives, Jewish lives.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your ministry. How is your ministry actually funded, Cheryl?
Well, I'm actually funded by people all over the United States, and some in Australia, some in England, people that hear about what I do and want to come alongside. And some people actually come over, and I take them to some of the people that I minister to. And as you said, I don't minister to only the Palestinian people, the Muslim people, but there are many Jewish people that I minister to, people in Bethlehem, the Bethlehem Christians, who are really under persecution over there. And so the funding comes from just supporters from all over. I'm also doing radio reports. I'm doing a lot of articles for some newspapers, some magazines. And as people hear what's going on, they want to be involved. The first way to be involved, of course, is to pray for the people and for the situation. But they support me financially, and the support has been so good that it just flows over into helping these people, like these people that don't have food, or if they don't have heat in the winter, or if the kids don't have coats or shoes. That's what I do, is I go out and I help them.
Well, now, certainly, how, if people would like to help you, how would they go about doing that?
Well, we have a gal who's taking care of, you know, helping with the ministry, because it's really grown. But they would just email. They could just email contact at fastforlife,
Now, give that email one more time.
Okay, it's contact
at Fact for Life.
At Fast
for
Life.
For Life.
Yes, when I say fast, I'm talking about the fast of Isaiah 58. It comes out of Isaiah 58. God says, is this the fast I've chosen? No, the fast he's chosen is to feed the hungry, to aid the poor, to serve the body, and teach the truth. Now, we do that physically with food, with clothing, with all those type of things, but we also do that by taking Bibles, taking the Word, feeding them the Word of God, and serving the poor people and helping the body of Christ, the persecuted Jewish messianic believers over there. We help them because they're being persecuted and they're out there doing the work of the Lord. So that's another part of the ministry.
Now, but you're talking about the persecuted messianic believers. These are Jews who converted to Christianity.
That's right.
And I suppose they get discriminated against too then.
Right, because a lot of the Jewish people believe that once you become a Christian, you are no longer a Jew. So only Jews are allowed to immigrate to Israel, pretty much. So they want to kick all of the Messianic, the Christians, out, even if they're Jewish background. So if they don't get them kicked out, then they come and they attack them physically by throwing rocks at the windows where the kids are sleeping, by firebombing their buildings, by pushing them. I mean, just physical attacks. And so it's very hard. I helped some people down in Iran. They were firebombed, and the whole building was gutted out. I went down and helped clean it up, and then we just restocked everything with Bibles and with the things that they needed. They had a chess club. They had Russian immigrants coming over and learning to play chess, having fun, and if they asked about the Lord or asked why the Christians are doing this, the Christian messianic believers, they would tell them, but they would not push their religion. You know, you cannot do that over there. And so they were firebombed by ultra-Orthodox Jews. So there is persecution going on right now.
Well, of course, it seems so incongruous that the Jews who've been persecuted would persecute others for their religious beliefs.
Okay, pardon? I didn't hear you.
No, I've seen that. The Orthodox Jews have been persecuted in the past, and yet, of course, they turn around and persecute Messianic Jews. So, you know, that here you have persecuted people who are persecuting other people just because they don't like the way they believe.
Yeah, that's true. And I went up to one of them. We were actually giving some homeless people. It was a soup kitchen, and we were feeding these homeless people. And some of these ultra-Orthodox, they're called Ger Hasidic. So it's a special sect of Judaism. And they came and they started attacking the Christians that were there and the people that were eating. And so I went out and I asked one of them, why are you doing this? I mean, we're just trying to feed the people and help the Jewish people here. He said, no, the Christians are trying to steal the souls. This has been happening since the Crusades. They're trying to steal the souls of the Jewish person and make them a Christian, and they are wiping out the Jewish population. This is how they are brought up to believe. And so the guy was so zealous, he reminded me of Saul of Tarsus, you know, just out there killing the Jews, or killing the Christians, you know, and so zealous for God, but not understanding that God that we serve is Yeshua, HaMashiach. And so they just don't know who he is.
And so, Cindy, do you have any protection at all from the Jewish police? Is there anybody there to help you from the Jewish authorities?
Well, what happens is these Hasidic people are the ones that give the bar mitzvahs, and they're the ones that do the weddings and all this. So that when the police get called in a certain area, the police will not do anything against them, because then they are threatened by this group, this Jewish group, that they will never get their bar mitzvahs, their brits, you know, their weddings. And so the police stand by to make sure that there's no one hurting anyone, but they don't really get involved.
These are the people then with the black hats, the black suits, and the long hair?
That's it, yeah. Yeah, and not all of them. It's a special sect of them. Now, a friend of ours, somebody that you know and that I know, is planning to start a party in the Knesset.
That would be Avi.
That would be Avi, right. Avi Lipkin wants to start this party in the Knesset called the Bible Block, and he wants to get a Messianic Jew into the Knesset, which would help the Jewish people, the Messianic Jews, immensely in Israel.
All right, fine. We're going to be back in just a few minutes with Cheryl, and certainly we'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Cheryl's going over there right into the very heart of this insane conflict that exists over there. And there's so much hatred, and yet there's so much hope, and so many possibilities for helping. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly Sarah was just talking about Avi Lipkin, who's a friend of ours. And in fact, I did a interview with Avi the other day, and he made a statement, I think, which is really so true. And where he said that today the Israeli government, he said, you know, a lot of Jews aren't going to like this. And he says a lot of Christians aren't going to like this. But the truth of the matter is that the Israeli government today is simply an extension of the American government. It does not act on its own or its own best interests. How would you feel about that? Do you think he's right?
Well, I know that the American government has a lot of influence on Israel, the Israeli government, and it could be a bad thing, too, for Israel. Israel needs to protect herself, and a lot of people see the American government as being very arrogant and taking over Israel when Israel needs to watch out for herself, such as the Iran incident that's going on. If Israel does attack Iran, the nuclear site, let's say they just take out the nuclear site, no people, the nuclear site, who would stand with Israel during that time? The international community would not agree with this, but would America stand by Israel? Or would this be the time, as it says in the prophecy, where all nations come against Israel? Israel, at some point, has to stand up for herself and protect herself. I live over there, and I love the Muslim people, and I love the Israeli people and the Jewish people. I go to all areas, the West Bank. I mean, I've been attacked in the West Bank, but I still go. But I see that the Jewish people need to protect themselves. They need to put up those blocks and those boundaries to keep the suicide bombers out. They had two people try to get through just today to do suicide bombing in Israel. And they were stopped.
Well, of course, is that barrier really sufficient to keep the people out, to keep the suicide bombers out?
If they finish the barrier, it would really help. Because, like I told you, I know a lot of Muslim people. Now, some of the guys that I work with, they have their families in the West Bank. So I know the back roads, and they know the back roads. So their families, they want to see their families. We meet in the olive groves. I drive. And the kids and the families will come walking over the streets and down the dirt roads. They'd probably walk for miles. And then we meet them. We give them money. We give them food. We help them. They get to visit their families. They know all the back ways to get in and out of Israel. But once those areas are shut, that's going to shut off these families. But it will also shut off a lot of the attacks that will happen in Israel. But it's going to be a while before they get these barriers up.
Well, now, of course, you're taking an awful chance when you go over in the West Bank, aren't you?
Yes, but I do it for good reason. And a lot of it is because the people are wanting to hear about hope. As a matter of fact, I need to tell you, Stan, that I've been there 7.5 years, and I've seen more people come to the Lord this year than in all 7.5 years that I've been there. Because there is so much hopelessness in Israel on both the Jewish side and the Palestinian side that they want you to come talk. I could go 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and talk to people about the Lord. There's not enough time for me to go to every family.
Well, do you have any help over there? I mean, are there any other Christian missionaries like you there that you work with?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, there's not enough of us, for one thing, and everyone has their little certain areas. As a matter of fact, just for instance, one gal named Karen is in Jericho, and now there's 350 people that came to the Lord in Jericho.
Now, of course, that the Jericho is actually in the Palestinian area, isn't it?
It's in the West Bank, deep in the West Bank.
How does she manage to survive in this, you know, really it's a Muslim enclave?
Right. She's been attacked many times. She's been firebombed. Her house has been firebombed. She's been threatened. Her life has been threatened. She went there with her little son. And they started handing out bags of rice.
Hold that. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Cheryl Hancock, who's going to be flying to Israel here later this week. And she'll be there for probably a better part of a year as a missionary and, of course, preaching the Word of God to both the Muslims and to the Jews there. But she's telling us about one of her friends, Karen, who lives in Jericho. That's how old a woman is she?
Oh, she's probably about 40 years old.
And she has a son. And there, I suppose they have support from the outside. They went there, and they were handing out bags of rice to the people.
Right. They moved into a refugee camp, which is the worst condition that you can move into, and started handing out bags of rice with tracks in it. Then they finally got permission from the government to hand out these tracts because they were giving so much rice to people to help them with food. But they were also being attacked by those that didn't want them there. But now she's holding meetings every week with at least 350 people. I went to the meeting and they're just raising their hands. They with their kafayas on, the Arab men, and their burqas, the women, and they were just worshiping the Lord, dancing. It's absolutely incredible. And this all happened within the past year and a half, 2 years.
Well, I think that sometimes when things are hopeless, why people will turn to the only real source of hope that any of us have, and that's our personal relationship with the Lord.
That's true. And now, not only the Muslim people are turning to the Lord, but as I told you, the Jewish people are. I went up north, and these immigrants that are coming from Russia, I went to see some of them that were drug addicts. And they went into a house to become ex-drug addicts. And that was my background. I was a big partier when I was in America. And so I went up there, and I gave my testimony, and it was translated in Russian. Well, there are 66 people in this little monastery, and most of them have become believers. And they are not just regular believers. They're on-fire believers, ready to go out and tell everybody about the Lord.
And I really do, because Cheryl was also saying that it's not simply the Muslims that are coming to know the Lord. She said that she's had more people this last year come to know the Lord than all the 7 years she's been over there before. Was that a fair statement?
That's an accurate statement. Something is happening over there, and it's almost like the Hezbollah war hastened it. When the Israeli, when I went back and I talked to the soldiers and I talked to the people in the streets of Matula in the north and the places that were hit by Hezbollah, I said, what happened here? And they said, we lost this war. This is the first war we lost since 1948. What happened? They said, we have no hope in our, because they always had this hope in their army. Their army was so strong and they could always outdo. But this time they lost. And so the hopelessness was there and they were so open. I gave out more books about the Lord, more Bibles than ever before within 2 weeks. Just traveling up in the north, talking to soldiers and talking to people. I even got to the mayor's office in Matula and talked to him and his staff. Unbelievable.
Well, I think that the Lord will have to look after you because, of course, there's no other way that you can survive in this sort of a hostile environment. Of course, what people here in America don't understand is that they're constantly firing rockets, both from Lebanon and from Gaza into Israel. Both the northern and southern provinces there, are under a constant attack. Now, it's not as bad as it was, but how many missiles are they getting every day? Do we have any idea?
Well, they were getting at least five a day. Now, I haven't been there in a couple of months because I did a speaking tour on the East Coast, but I live about 40 minutes from Gaza, and when there's attacks, I can hear it. I can hear what's going on over there, and it's a continuous thing. When the settlers had to move out, they could have taken over, the Palestinians could have taken over those buildings, had nice fruitful land, but instead they brought up their firing area closer so that they could shoot further into Israel. So instead, now they're shooting further into Israel, and the fighting has not stopped. Trading all that land, moving all those people, did not one piece of good for Israel.
Well, I think really, of course, if you look at things going on logically, why there's nothing logical about it. Everything that is being done is to limit the landmass of Israel, and they've given up most of their land that they had, and it's almost as if somebody is intent upon giving this a sense of hopelessness, because there's no way in the world, especially if there is a war coming down the line, that Israel will be able to survive without God's intervention. I mean, I'm firmly convinced of that. I also do believe that He is going to intervene, and I think that we are going to see some miraculous things, before this is over. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you. Something is going to happen where God is going to open the eyes of the people. As a matter of fact, in the news today, Olmert was saying that if Hamas were to take over the government, they would accept it if they would accept Hamas, if they would say that Israel, they would recognize Israel as a state. Okay, so if they allow that to happen, I got to tell you a little bit about Islam. Islam can make any kind of statement they want, and they can lie for the cause. It's in the Quran that they are allowed to lie for the cause. So if they sign a contract, they sign an agreement, and if they say these things, it can be a lie. But, they're buying into it. Walmart's ready to give more land away. Israel, like you said, is getting smaller and smaller. The war is coming. The nations are lining up against Israel.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Cheryl Hancock, and she's talking about what's going on over in Israel. And just saying that it's almost as if we're reading the scriptures right now as we see what is transpiring. The nations, all the surrounding nations, are lining up against little Israel.
Oh, yeah,
and there's no way, of course, without divine intervention that Israel is going to survive. Without, something supernatural happening, you cannot simply stand off against Egypt and against Saudi Arabia and against Syria and against the Hezbollah forces there in Lebanon and probably against Jordan and all of these countries, and then, of course, Iran, if they can possibly, get their forces over there, will be there trying to destroy Israel. There's no way Israel can possibly survive. Go ahead, Cheryl.
No, and most people know that. And what's really a phenomenon that's going on, because we're seeing, like you said, we're seeing Bible prophecy in front of our eyes being fulfilled, yet the people from the North America, I'm talking Canadians and Americans, are coming to Israel, immigrating by the thousands right now. And this hasn't happened in many, many years. As somebody stated years ago, they said, when you start seeing the North Americans immigrating to Israel, know that the time is near of the end. And so I went to the airport and I interviewed some of these people. I said, why are you moving to America? These are just Jewish people,
well,
right?
I'm moving from America to Israel. Right.
From America. Thank you for straightening me out. Yes. From America to Israel at this time when there's going to be a war, when it's hard to live in Israel, gas is over $7 a gallon. You know, all these conditions. And the people I talked to said, you know what? We're living in the last days. And we Jews need to stick together. We need to help our brothers and sisters. So we're here to stand by our people.
Well, now, are these really religious Jews? Or is this sort of this idea of the Jewish fraternity, the commonality? Are these deeply religious people? Or are these people who certainly have this feeling of being Jewish and want, of course, to be part of what's going on?
Some of them were religious that I talked to. There were, I think, 3,000 people at the airport. Some of them were religious. Some were secular. And did you know that during the war, during the Hezbollah war, that a lot of young men from America, North America, went over there and fought in the war, whether they were religious or not. They joined the troops, the Israeli troops, to help their brothers and sisters fight Hezbollah.
I see. Well, of course, I'm sure everybody was disappointed because I really think Israel could have won the war. They were not allowed to win the war. This is the problem. And, of course, the orders were given by a man named Javier Solana. You will stop the war. Javier is the most powerful man in Europe. He visited Olmert, and Olmert said, yes, sir. And they pulled the troops out, and they lost the war, but I don't think they had to. We'll be right back here.
Right.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Cheryl Hancock, and of course, she's a missionary to Israel, and she's going to be over there doing what I think I know I and my wife would love to do, but I'm afraid that we're not going to be able to make it, at least this time. Anyway, Cheryl, let's once again give your website and, of course, your address if people would like to contribute and help and support what you're doing.
Okay, the website that we have, as a matter of fact, we're just starting it up because we're going to be a humanitarian aid organization over there in Israel to help the Israelis. So the website is www.fastforlife.org. And to contact...
one more time, what is that?
www.fastforlife.
Fast, FASTFORLIFE, fast. For life. Go ahead.
.org. Yeah. And actually, if you want to contact someone, contact. The email address is contact@fastforlife.org.
All right, fine. Interested. This is a very, very important ministry, and Cheryl's very, very brave to be going over there. If you're out in the listening audience, do you have any questions for Cheryl? Why, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And, of course, Cheryl sends out a regular email. We're on their list. How often would you be sending those emails out for us?
I usually send out the emails every 10 days.
All right, fine. I hope you'll get us your telephone number, because maybe we could actually go ahead. Sydney, it's a miracle of a telephone one, actually, of course, gets you on from time to time to keep us abreast of what's going on over there.
Yeah, what I can do is I'll just give you a call from Israel once in a while and let you know what's going on directly.
All right, fine. Well, of course, we'd like to get you onto our programs as well so that people would know, because, you know, they hear me talk all the time. I think that they really enjoy what you had to say. And certainly, what happened when you talked to the mayor of this town up there in northern Israel? Because here, I mean, these towns are really not safe. They never know when the rocket's going to come in there and kill people. I mean, that's happening literally every day. So, and I know at least some of the towns in southern Israel, there's one, I keep on calling it Sederot. What is Sederot or something of the sort? That's where they've actually...
Sderot.
How do you call it?
Sderot.
Sderot, right. And they've actually largely evacuated that, haven't they?
Well, the one up north, yes, they did evacuate. As a matter of fact, when I spoke to the mayor of Matula, which is the northern border, they're right on the border of Lebanon, I just happened into his office and just ran into it. And then he invited me in for, I was hungry too, and he invited me in for tea and cookies. So I walked into his office and I asked him what happened during the war and how did he react. He said, you know, we lost the war. He said, we weren't prepared. The army was not prepared. Their communication systems weren't prepared. They were not communicating. He said, our bomb shelters weren't ready. We weren't ready. We had to send the kids out in buses to go to camps down in the south to protect our children. And I said, what are you going to do for the future? He says, this was only a rehearsal. He said, this was that Elohim, God, Hashem, who they call God, is just warned us that the real fighting, the real war is coming soon. And this was a rehearsal. Now they're going to prepare their bunkers. They're going to have an evacuation plan. They're going to get everything in order. The army's getting better equipment. Everyone is getting prepared for what's coming up in the future.
And I think everybody over there really realizes another war is coming, and with that are going to come and take terrible complications. Now, because you've got your Maronite Christians up in Lebanon, are they fleeing the country? Do you have any idea what's happening there?
Yeah, a lot of the Maronite Christians fled the country in 2000 when the borders opened right there in Matula, and they came into Israel. But a lot of them went under persecution, and actually people walked in, and Hezbollah walked in and just shot them in their houses. So they're under a lot of persecution from the Muslims over there because they are Christian.
And, of course, at one time, of course, Lebanon was half Maronite and half Muslim. But then, of course, because the Muslims have a lot more children than the Christians do, pretty soon the Muslims were in the predominant position. And then, of course, we had the Syrian occupation. And that's been one war after another, really, starting in the 80s. And it's really sort of a chaotic situation in Lebanon as well. Although, traditionally, the Christians there have supported the Jews. Has that attitude changed since the recent war, do you know?
Well, actually, yeah, you're right. The Maronite Christians, they fought alongside and they guarded alongside with the Israeli soldiers. And they were very afraid of the Hezbollah when they came in. Hezbollah, as you know, used the people and the towns as human shields, that the Israelis could not go in and bomb the towns or they would really look bad in the Western world. Then they used the people. And, of course, they have to go along with what's going on there. Otherwise, they will get killed and they will be persecuted.
So it's really a tragic situation for the Christians in that area. This is the Christians have been driven out of Iraq now that we've gone in there and liberated the country, while the Christians have been forced to flee, and about three-quarters of the Christians, almost three-quarters of the Christians, now have left Iraq now that we've brought democracy. Of course, the democracy we brought to Iraq was a nation under Sharia and Muslim law. Under Saddam Hussein, you had a secular society, and if you were a Christian, you could live there. If you were, as long as you didn't interfere with the government, why, you could live. And, of course, we had all sorts of people, the Sunnis and the Shias and the Christians and the Kurds all got along together. And now, of course, we've brought about a nation under Sharia law, headed by the one man, one vote, under Shia control, and of course, we've had a situation where there's no future in Iraq for the Christians. And the same thing, it looks like the same thing's going to happen to the Christians in Lebanon. So what a tragic situation we see for the whole of the Middle East.
Well, also, this is happening in Bethlehem, because Bethlehem is a West Bank town that if Hamas does get government control, they want to impose Sharia law in Bethlehem, which means my friends who are the Christians, Greek Orthodox, Russian Orthodox, Catholics, they would have to wear burqas, and Christians are taxed if they are not a Muslim, they are taxed, and they can put any kind of amount of tax on these people.
Well, I mean, I thought, aren't there most of these, certainly a priest or something working there, in the church there, or are there actually Russian Orthodox live in the general community?
Yeah, Russian Orthodox live there. Greek Orthodox, Armenian Orthodox live there. One of my little brothers, I call him my brother, he lives in Bethlehem with his family. I told him to leave. Leave Bethlehem while you still can. But his wife doesn't want to leave. The children don't want to leave Bethlehem. They've grown up there all their lives. But once that wall goes up, and if they do impose Sharia law, they will be stuck there. And there is not going to be a future for those children. And they're like family to me. I've known them for 6 years. So we're trying to talk them into getting out while they can. As you said, Bethlehem is greatly reduced in numbers of Christians, maybe 6-7% now only.
Well, I know at one time there were a lot of Palestinian Christians that were there. A lot of some of the businessmen we encounter were Palestinian Christians, but I think they've already been simply forced to leave, or really almost threatened and told if they didn't leave, why they'd be killed.
Right, they're under persecution, and that way they are being threatened. Their shops are being closed. People are not going into Bethlehem. But I have to tell you that the tourist season, tourists have picked up going into Israel now. And that is most of the evangelical Christians, even during these hard times, are wanting to support Israel. So it has picked up, and I go around speaking about Israel, and I encourage Christians to go. And so I have many groups coming to visit me this year. And I will introduce them to some of the local people to go in and meet some of these people and buy some of their goods and pray for them and encourage them.
I think, you know, what's so difficult is that you've got people in Israel. There may be Muslims who've converted to Christianity, but they can't get a permit to work. So how do they live? How do they get food? How do they get lodging?
No, it's very difficult. As a matter of fact, there's one man that I am paying the rent for. We call it a safe house. We put a distribution center in there. I gather clothing from different organizations in Jerusalem who give me free clothing. I buy clothing sometimes. I buy food, and we give it to them to help them survive because they cannot work. They have to work under the table if they work at all, or they have to come up with something themselves. And one of my friends, he makes olive oil soap and olive oil anointing oil and things like that, and we help him get it out to the West to sell it. We have to come up with ways that they can support their family, because it's an honor to support your family. It's very dishonoring for a man not to be able to support his family, and it's very difficult on them.
And here you are. I mean, what a terrible situation. How would you like to be in a situation where you had to have a permit to work and you couldn't get a permit? And these people almost have a sense of total hopelessness.
Exactly.
Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, and certainly Jerusalem has been said to be will become a cup of trembling. In other words, it will be a center of really of conflict, and I think we can see this developing today. One of the things we hear a lot about is Temple Mount, and apparently there's been a lot of excavation there. In fact, it's my understanding a lot of this was being done by the Muslims, trying to dig down underneath the wall there adjacent to the Al-Aqsa Mosque, so they could remove any relics that might prove that the Jews at one time had a claim to this area. Of course, this was the area where the original temple was built. This is the area where David had come and this is actually where Abraham had done the sacrifice. Traditionally, a Jewish center. In fact, it wasn't even a Muslim center until a couple of hundred years ago. Their major centers were Medina and Mecca. And Mecca. But of course, when they found that Jews and Christians, were so dedicated to the Temple Mount, well, then they suddenly decided that that's where the Muhammad had actually gone up to the moon or something and returned one evening. So that then became the third most holy site in all of the Muslim faith. But it really wasn't. This has not always been the case. This was just something more recently. But what is happening there on Temple Mount? Is there really going to be a collapse there, that where some of this is going to crumble?
Okay, I'm glad you asked that, because I love archaeology. And I heard about these Muslims that were underneath and getting rid of the relics and trashing them, breaking them up, stealing them, putting them in the Kidron Valley. And one young archaeologist from Bar-Ilan University saw this happening. He asked the court, can I take this dirt, these mounds of dirt, and go up and sift through it and see if I can find anything that can prove we had a temple on the Temple Mount? Because what the Muslims are trying to prove is that this is Muslim land, this is not Jewish land, and that the Bible that we have is not truth, but it belongs to the Muslim people. So I found out that they were sifting through this rubble, and I went to help. And as a matter of fact, I found a Babylonian arrowhead. And this proves that the Babylonians came to take the Jews into captivity to Babylon, which is in the Bible. And since then, they found more artifacts that prove that the Jews did have a temple on the Temple Mount, and just recently that they acknowledged that the Jews did have a temple on the Temple Mount. They also found David's palace recently. The archaeologist who found it heard that I found the Babylonian arrowhead. Now, she thinks I have an eye for this kind of thing, but it just happened to be on top of my screen, and she invited me to come and dig in the Palace of David when I go back. They also found the Pool of Siloam. So now they're finding out that Jerusalem was a Jewish place. And this is all happening within the past couple of years.
Well, now, so where is the David's Palace?
David's Palace is in the city of David, which is right down, right south of the Temple Mount. So it goes down the hill by the Silwan Valley, where there's a lot of Arabs living there right now. But it was the original place where David went. He made his palace. It's called the City of David. Then there was a bridge that goes up to the Temple Mount area where he built the temple.
All right, fine. Now, is that down by the entrance to Hezekiah's Tunnel?
Yes, very close to Hezekiah's Tunnel. Hezekiah's Tunnel, if you keep going down from the City of David by David's Palace, you run into the Hezekiah's Tunnel and to the Pool of Siloam, which was just found last year. They just uncovered it. And all these things have just been uncovered. So it's all in this area. And I love taking friends, tourists, people that come and show them these places that are actual places.
Well, we hear all sorts of rumors that the Jews actually know where the Ark of the Covenant is, because this is such an important part of the temple. And, of course, the question is, what happened to the Ark of the Covenant? Those who remember the Indiana Jones movies remember that the first one centered around, of course, the pursuit of the Ark of the Covenant. Those of you who don't remember what happened when the Germans opened the Ark or tried to open the Ark, well, that's something that's really one of those things that certainly indelibly imprinted in my mind. But we hear all sorts of rumors that they really do know where the Ark is. What do you think?
Well, I don't know. I've heard a lot of the stories, too. There's a place called the Temple Institute in Israel, in the old city of Jerusalem, that you can go to, and they have built all the things to make the third temple. Now, they claim to know where the Ark of the Covenant is, and also where the red heifer is, and that they are raising this red heifer, because that's needed for the sacrifice. And one of the rumors going around also is that the Vatican, now, what do you do when Israel, when the capital of, which is Jerusalem, is supposed to be the capital of the Jewish people, which it is now and has been for many years, but the Palestinians say it's their capital. And so now they're building this wall, and they're figuring out, well, who's going to get the Temple Mount? Well, the Vatican steps in and says, well, we should make this an international community, the Temple Mount, where we can have the go ahead, have your mosque up there. You have the Dome of the Rock. You have the Al-Aqsa Mosque. But let's go ahead and let the Christians worship there and have a church on the Temple Mount. But also, let's build another temple and let the Jewish people go up there and worship. So this is something that is could be in the plan for the future. Who knows?
We've heard actually some rumors that the Vatican wanted to actually have some property there on Mount Zion, which for our listeners is just out, I guess, is that just south? Yeah, that would be just south of the Temple Mount.
That's true.
And that they had actually wanted to get some property there that would be sovereign Vatican territory. Had you heard that?
Yes. I read that in the paper over there, as a matter of fact. Yeah.
Why would the Vatican want to have land on Mount Zion that would be sovereign land? In other words, it would be like a sovereign state within Israel.
Yeah, well, that makes you wonder, is this really going to come to pass? Is there going to be an international area where Christians can come and worship freely? Because right now, if I go to the Temple Mount, there's only certain hours I can go up there, and it's run by the Palestinians, by the walks. who is the leader of the holy site, which is the Temple Mount, and they will not let me pray on the Temple Mount. They will not let groups gather on the Temple Mount. You cannot take a Bible on the Temple Mount. This is a Muslim territory. But Jewish people want to go up there and they want to worship, and Christians want to go up there and they want to worship and pray. So something's going on up there on the Temple Mount and in Mount Zion, City of David.
Do you think that occurs that wall is going to collapse there, that part of the a part of the Temple Mount is going to collapse?
It's possible. They had some workers in there from Jordan fixing it because it was there was a bulge in the wall, and they're afraid that when the Muslims go up there for Ramadan, thousands, hundreds of thousands of them, it could collapse that Temple Mount. Then what would happen?
And, of course, think of the implications of this. In fact, they've been actually under, they've been actually tunneling up there, even under the Mosque of Omar. And, of course, if that, I mean, how would you ever get the Mosque of Omar down if the Jews did it? And why it would be a holy war?
Mm-hmm.
What happens to the Muslim that does under tunnel it and it comes down?
Who would be blamed for it?
We're going to be back in just a moment to wrap up the program with Cheryl Hancock. We'll be leaving shortly. Well, Cheryl, when did you head for the Holy Land?
I leave in 2 days, Thursday.
Are you getting excited about it?
Oh, I'm very excited. I'm very ready. Yeah.
Well, I think I'm ready that we're certainly going to be looking over your shoulder. We'll be looking for you to email. I don't know if you have our home telephone number, but you have this number. Do you have our home number?
No, I don't have your home number.
All right, I'll tell you what. When I let you go here in about a minute or two, I'm going to put you on hold, and certainly our producer can give you that number. So
okay.
I hope that, Kevin, I hope you know the telephone number. If not, you get it from Barbie, so that Cheryl can give us a call and keep us appraised. Certainly the number here at the studio, we're only here during this time, so we're actually doing the programs. Well, anyway, of course, what are your thoughts you'd like to leave with our listeners tonight? Because, of course, you're going into a very, very dangerous area, but you're going there because you feel you're called to do God's work. I don't think there's ever been a more dangerous time to be in Israel than this coming year.
Yeah.
What message would you like to leave with our listeners tonight?
Well, I would like to just let the listeners know that prayer is needed for the people, all the people of Israel, and I'm not one to go to one group or the other group, but I want to do exactly what the Lord wants me to do there, because you can go and you can spend your time, energy, and resources in so many areas because so many people need help. And I need to focus on what the Lord wants me to do. And I would really covet prayers for that. And to really look what's going on in the Middle East, what's going on in Israel, because if your eyes are turned towards Israel, then you're going to know the signs of the times. It just lines up with prophecy. And we're going to know what's going on and what the signs of the times are. And it's going to affect us here in America.
And I think that this is what the average American doesn't understand. We sort of have an idea that everything's going to be fine here. We've got nothing to worry about. And even if we do have a war over in the Middle East, that's going to bother the Middle East. Even if we have a war in the Near East, that's only going to be there. And people don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
Once war begins, you never know how it's going to end. And I'm sure that, you know, in the First World War, the Kaiser of Germany, the king of the emperor of Austria-Hungary, they never had any idea that the war was going to end with the destruction of their empires, any more than the Turks realized that their empire was going to fall, or the Russian realized that their empire was going to fall. We're moving into very, very difficult times, and so pray for Cheryl and pray for her efforts over there, and pray for the people of both sides, both the Palestinians and the Christians. Because and the Israelis that are there. Good night. May God be with you, Cheryl.
And thank you. Good night.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Bye. Shalom.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I'm hoping that Kevin's picking that up and giving Cheryl our home number so that she can give us a call, and we'll keep you posted as to what's happening over there. I think that, of course, we're going to be in very, very difficult times, not only in the Near East, but the Middle East. And it's very obvious that President Bush is determined to go to war. Doesn't matter that the American people don't want it. Doesn't matter that the Congress doesn't want it. He's the ruler of America. And he said it. I don't care what they say. I make the decisions. Well, I think it's about time that Congress needs to think about the impeachment of the President of the United States if he does not care, because, of course, the President is simply a figurehead. The people who control President Bush have already made the decision we're going to have a war in the Middle East. Why? Because their dedication is not to America. Their dedication is to the New World Order and the New World Religion, an ancient plan of the secret societies. For as George Bush said at the end of his second inaugural speech, and I hope you'll get it, when our founders declared a new order of the ages, they were acting on an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. When our founders declared a new order of the ages, when our men fell row on row in pursuit of a union based on liberty, when our people marched in righteous indignation beneath the banner of freedom now, they were acting on an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. And you have to understand, this is esoteric writing. What you do is you put all those things in the middle so people can't figure out what you're saying. But what he really said was, when our founders declared a new order of the ages, they were acting on an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. What is the ancient hope? It is the world government and the new world religion with the new God. And of course, he ends his first inaugural speech with a statement that the angel still rides in the whirlwind and guides the storm. Get the speeches out, or actually we have them included in their entirety in our syllabus we put together called the Immigration Invasion. You can't understand what's happening here, why we're not trying to stop the immigration invasion, unless you understand, of course, what's going on. Incidentally, I will be speaking there in Southern California on the 1st of February. I'll be speaking at the Pro-America group, and then I'll be at the Granada Forum, and I'll be giving the talk and explaining how all of this fits together. So we hope that many of you, if you're in Southern California, will be coming to the Granada Forum on the evening of the 1st of February. And then, of course, we hope many of you, if you have not read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, will want to get it. If you want to get those speeches, of course, of the President, they're in the syllabus on the immigration invasion, although we will have that tape available, hopefully, in a couple of weeks, the videotapes that goes with it, to explain how this all fits together. There is an ancient plan. It was known certainly to Alexander the Great. He talked about it in his writings to Aristotle. It was known to Thomas Jefferson. It's been known to the elite throughout the world since the beginning of time. And it's known to the elite who rule the world today. And their goal, their loyalty is not to America. Their loyalty is to this ancient dream that is meant to be fulfilled today. And so we hope that many of you will look on the back of your dollar bill, notice the pyramid cap on the all-seeing eye with the slogan, Novus Ordo Seclorum. That's what it's really all about. It is about creating this ideal society, and the reason, of course, that the triangle hovers over the top of the pyramid, it will settle into place when the world government is in place and the world is ruled by the new world ruler. We hope that, of course, you'll want to get the videos. They sold their souls for rock and roll. They sold video Megiddos. There are two of them, part one, part two. You want to get the secret mysteries of America's beginning. And there's so much more available at RadioLiberty.com. Let's go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. If you'd like a catalog, we'll send you one. Start thinking about making your preparations for the very difficult times that lie ahead. If you need to get either medical or food supplies, give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for Radio Liberty.